Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This summer, children around Illinois may receive a new benefit from the state to help their families buy food. It could help more than a million children, and advocates are trying to get the word out. So listen up. I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Anti-hunger advocates have wanted this for years, a school lunch program for the periods when the schools are not open, like in the summer. That wish has been granted this year by the state of Illinois. We spoke with a leading advocate about the program and a lot more. Sophie Milam is vice president of policy and advocacy for the Greater Chicago Food Depository. And she was excited to have good news to report.
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity. So millions of children receive meals each day at our schools, breakfast and lunch. In fact, children consume up to 50% of their total daily calories at school. So you can imagine when school ends for the summer, that can create a hardship or a strain on families when they lose access to those meals. So we're really excited that this summer, Illinois families and families across the country are going to have a new support available to them. It's called Summer EBT. And it is a grocery EBT card that they can use at authorized retailers to purchase the nutrition that works for their family and make sure that children have the nutrition that they need during the summer.
And EBT stands for electronic benefit transfer for people who aren't familiar with that. Well, first, though, before we talk about what the program exactly will do, what were families doing about meals before this? Because let's face it, the school meal programs have been around for a while and summer's been around for a while.
That's right. So we do have other programs. We have something called the Summer Food Service Program, which is operated across the country. The Food Depository, in fact, supports hundreds of sites each summer. It is a great program where it works. It does not work in all communities. So essentially, it provides meals and snacks on site for children to eat during the summer. Oftentimes, there might be an enrichment activity as well, but not every community has a program. Even in communities that do have a program, it may not run all summer long. So maybe it helps in the month of July, but then it's not there the rest of the summer. And unlike in the school year where we have buses in rural areas, for example, to transport children to school, we don't have that with the summer food service program. So that transportation can be a barrier. All that to say, the result is that there's very low uptake. So as an example, in Illinois, there are almost 700,000 low-income children who are receiving free meals during the school year. Only about 10% are accessing the summer food program in the most recent summer. So the question you asked, what are families doing? Well, 10% of them might be able to access a meal program for part of the summer, but many of them are not. And unfortunately, we see child hunger rates often increase during the summer. And it's something that we've been advocating for well over a decade to try and get a better program to serve families.
Well, let's talk about the program that you did get. This program, first off, how much does it cost? And I mean, for the government, and how were you able to get it through the legislature?
You know, I will have to come back to you on the total cost. I can tell you kind of what we're going to see here in Illinois. Mm-hmm. We've been advocating for this program since I think about 2008, 2009, advocates across the country. So it's taken quite a long time to make the case that we had to do something more to reach children during the summer. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, with support from Congress, has piloted and studied different ways to feed children during the summer. And after years of trying some different models and years of evidence, we were finally successful in getting kind of the nationwide expansion of those pilots. And so Illinois was one of the first states to raise their hands and say, yep, we want to implement this as soon as we can in summer 2024. We think that about 1.1 million children in Illinois are going to be eligible for over $130 million in benefits, which is huge. And I will tell you, actually, one of the most, I think, compelling pieces of evidence that really pushed this over the edge in terms of advocacy was the pandemic. So during the pandemic, when schools were closed, Congress authorized a temporary program called Pandemic EBT, PEBT, that provided families an EBT card for groceries. It was a little bit different. The amounts and the eligibility were a little bit different, but the same thing was that it was getting food in the hands of families with young children. And for comparison, the year before the pandemic, Illinois had about 100,000 children participating in summer meal programs. With PBT, we were serving over 1 million children. So we know that this is going to be really successful in connecting families with nutrition during the summer when school is out, and are grateful for advocacy and advocates across the country in moving this forward.
Yeah, how are families going to know whether they're eligible or not?
That's a really big challenge and something that we've been thinking about. I mean, this is a brand new program. In fact, the state, Illinois, is still actively setting up the program, getting systems in place. So there hasn't been much kind of a runway to get the word out to families. We've been partnering. The Greater Chicago Food Depository has the privilege of co-chairing the Illinois Commission on Hunger, which is a public-private partnership with state agencies like the Illinois Department of Human Services, the Illinois State Board of Education. And through the commission, we have been working to develop awareness materials and to reach out to community-based organizations, elected officials across the state so that they can help get the word out to families that they are serving. But it is standing up a new program is hard. It's probably going to take a couple of years before we get it really families sort of know about it and know how to apply, and it just becomes part of their cadence of how they connect with nutrition during the year. But we're doing everything we can to make sure that summer 2024 is successful and that we're connecting to as many families as possible.
Can I assume that families that were eligible for meal programs for their children in school every day are probably eligible for this? Is it close to that?
That is very close. So let's get specific. Families with school-age children who are under 185% of the poverty line, which is about $57,000 for a family of four, are going to be eligible for this. There's some more detail there. Number one, want families to know there's not a citizenship requirement like all of our federal nutrition programs. So this will be a really important source of nutrition for certain immigrant households. There are a couple different pathways for families to connect. Most importantly, if I could share one thing, it's that families should go to wegotyouillinois.org. It is a webpage that has every last detail. It is constantly being updated with the latest information. So that's really where you can go to get more information. But families have two main pathways. One is talking to your school. Make sure that you have a completed school meal application on file and that your address is up to date. This is especially important in Chicago and in other schools where all meals are provided for free to children. Because we provide meals for free without collecting individual applications in places where there's a high number of children in poverty, that's not going to qualify you. So if you're at a school like a CPS school where all meals are provided for free, you have to have an application on file, and you can reach out to your school now to ask to do that and to make sure that your address is up to date. The other pathway for families is through, if they're already participating in other public benefit programs like SNAP, TANF or cash assistance, income eligible Medicaid, or if they have a child in foster care, those families are automatically going to be enrolled in summer EBT. So there are a couple pathways in. It's a new program. It's kind of a lot to learn, but asking families to go to that wegotyouillinois.org website to learn more about how to get connected.
Well, I'm glad you repeated that because I was about to ask you to. But are there situations where parents who might have been eligible still have to let the school where they are know that, yeah, we want to participate during the summer. And let's face it, sometimes even contact information is not all, you know, all the same during the summer.
Yeah, I mean, part of the benefit of Congress and USDA studying this for so long is that we've learned some things. So in other states where they have automatically enrolled families who are participating in programs like SNAP, of course, we have much higher utilization of summer EBT, and that's great. So that's really important. Not only does it help families connect to summer EBT, but they're connecting to other benefits that can support them in terms of food and cash and healthcare. But there are families who are over the income limits for those programs, who their only way to kind of show their eligibility is through their school. Families move around during the school year, sometimes not just moving within a city, they might be moving to another city or even another state. And so making sure that your information is up to date, that you're enrolled and have an application on file with your school for school meal programs is really important to getting connected to summer EBT.
And you were telling me about, you know, even up to this point, only 10% of people eligible are participating. Well, that raises two questions. One, you know, what is the thing that needs to be done to widen that net? And the other thing is, if you actually caught every student who was eligible, are these programs big enough?
Well, that's the great part about federal nutrition programs. Most of them are mandatory entitlement programs, meaning they will serve all families who are eligible. Our school breakfast and lunch program work that way. SNAP works that way. And summer EBT works that way. So that's incredibly important about our nutritional safety net. It is there to serve all families who are eligible. So we're really excited about that.
But clearly, if only 10% of those eligible have gotten it up to now, I would say we're doing something wrong.
Well, that's right. But remember, that was a different program. So that was the meals at a congregate site during the summer program. That program is not going away, by the way. It is considered a complement to summer EBT. So families don't have to choose between going to a summer meal site in their community if they have one and enrolling in summer EBT. They can do both. And we certainly encourage families to get all the nutrition assistance that is available to them. But where summer EBT can come in with that 10% is for the families and the communities where the summer food meal program isn't working, it provides them a different option that they didn't have before, and hopefully one that's much more accessible to them.
It's also possible that, you know, people listening to this don't always think of, for example, you know, breakfast programs as being, you know, an absolute necessity, like kids won't have anything to eat all day if they don't get breakfast. But that's not necessarily the case. But also, I don't know if people know how common food insecurity is, or what, you know, we uninitiated just call hunger.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. For the families who know, they know all too well. We are seeing still today 1 in 4 households with children in the Chicago metropolitan area facing food insecurity. So that's a really significant number. Food insecurity exists in every county and every community. You just may not see it. And the consequences are really devastating. Number one, nationally and, you know, in Illinois and here in Chicago, Black and Latino families with children are disproportionately affected by hunger, which is really significant. We also know that food insecurity, hunger, has real impacts on children's development, their physical development, their cognitive development, but also their mental health. I could send you just a broad base of literature that illustrate the links between food insecurity and these poor health and developmental outcomes at every age. And so it is really critical that families are getting the nutrition that they need. One piece I'll mention is summer slide. So kids get a, you know, 3-month break from school. Many of them have a little bit of learning loss coming back to school in the fall. It's greater for food insecure children than it is for other children. There's all sorts of impacts that we see in terms of food insecurity, hunger's impact on children and families. And so you know, making sure that families know that this is available to them and that it's a support that's there to help them. That's kind of the most important thing that we can do, is making that support known and accessible to families so that they don't have to face these really difficult choices in terms of how they're going to support their children.
Yeah, and we do hear a lot of about the kind of developmental problems and mental problems. I mean, children who are worried about whether they're going to eat, have trouble paying attention in school, and, you know, sometimes can feel shame for anyone else to know it. So I know of those things. Let's talk about, well, especially from your perspective at the Greater Chicago Food Depository, how easy is it to get people to admit they need the help and to accept the help? I mean, is that not a big hurdle too?
It can be. And, you know, what we have learned is that hunger and connecting people to food assistance looks different from family to family, household to household. Older adults, the stigma that they feel, the barriers that they face are different from a family with young children or a family with school-age children. It is a blessing that we have meal programs in our schools at breakfast and lunch so that school-age children are able to get the nutrition they need in the places that they are going to be each day. And it is just part of their day. There's certainly some challenges still, especially with breakfast and connecting kids to those programs, but making it, you know, a seamless part of their day and reducing that stigma is really critical. As I mentioned, the SNAP program, giving families a private or a way of shopping that isn't kind of the way we used to do it in the old days in terms of food stamps, actual paper stamps, but they're shopping with a debit card like anyone else. They can shop at thousands of retailers that are, you know, authorized to accept those benefits. It makes it part of their way of just going about their day. It reduces that stigma, reduces barriers. But it really sort of depends on each family. What we have heard or what we have read about in the literature is that for families with children, food insecurity is first experienced by the parents. They are the ones who are reducing how much they eat, the quality of the food that they're eating, skipping meals so that they can protect their children from hunger. So by the time that we see children experiencing food insecurity, we know that those families have run out of choices to kind of protect their kids. And that's where having the nutrition assistance is so important.
You're listening to News Radio 780's At Issue. I'm political editor Craig Delamore. We're talking about fighting hunger among children in Illinois. My guest is Sophie Milam, a vice president with the Greater Chicago Food Depository. How much of a factor are things like what we've come to call food deserts? But I think of the problem even more broadly because, you know, someone close to me grew up talking about the kinds of meals they ate. And the issue wasn't that they thought they were necessarily hungry, but they weren't eating anything healthy. So how much does that all factor in as well? The ability to get the meals, no matter how much money you have, that you have to be able to get the food that's nutritious.
Yeah, that's also something that's really important. And we think about that a lot in Chicago and which neighborhoods have access to adequate retail and which don't. The thing about food deserts that we don't always lift up is that while they often are impacting communities that have households who are living in poverty, there are also people in those communities who have the resources they need to purchase food, but to your point, they don't have the choices. They don't have full service grocery stores with the most variety and the best price point of food. And so their choices are restricted. For low-income families, food insecure families, those are folks whose choices are already restricted by their budget. And then you couple that by the restrictions in terms of what's available to them. Time scarcity, transportation barriers, all of these things sort of compile and aggregate. And so oftentimes families are, just as you said, having nutrition that maybe prevents me from being hungry, but it's not the nutrition that I need to thrive.
I do want to talk to you about a couple of other quick things, because the programs that we've already talked about are there, but there's more. So let's talk a little bit. Well, and even before we talk about that, how prevalent is hunger in this area? How prevalent is it? I mean, you know, we discuss it, but is this affecting a lot more people than we think?
Yes. So child hunger, or I should say hunger in general, is not always visible. About 1 in 4 households with children in our community are struggling with food insecurity. It's something that is, like I said, it's in every community, it's in every county, but you just may not see it. In terms of trends that we've seen in recent years, you know, hunger went up during the Great Recession, was starting to fall. We were really concerned during the pandemic about the shocks that that had and how that would impact families. And certainly there were a lot more families who were struggling, but we did something really important as a country at that time, which is we expanded the safety net, and we did it really quickly. And so we expanded existing programs. I mentioned we stood up a program called PBT. We expanded the child tax credit. And the data that we have shows that those really protected families from, you know, sharp increases in poverty and food insecurity. Unfortunately, those programs expired, and they expired at the same time that families were also dealing with soaring inflation, especially around food prices, gas prices, declining wages. And so the phase out of those expanded benefits hit this really a triple blow to families who were, some of them, still reeling from financial instability brought about by the pandemic. And so, you know, having lived through COVID and working at a food bank and working in this space during that period, it was so visible. We saw it on the front page, food banks on the front page of the newspaper. That doesn't happen every day. But we saw, cars, you know, lined up for miles in some places. Everybody knew somebody, even if it wasn't a close friend. The restaurant that you go to, the dry cleaner that you go to, was closed. And you just, everyone was so aware, oh, that person who I see, they don't have a job right now. That place is closed. And so we really, as a society, economic hardship, food insecurity became so visible. And now the pandemic has receded. We've kind of gotten mostly back to normal, and food insecurity is one of those things that you just don't always see. The folks who see it, though, you know, teachers in schools who we talk to, they know the children who are showing up on Monday morning so eager for that school breakfast because they haven't had enough to eat over the weekend. There are folks who, you know, we see them showing up at our food pantries and hearing their stories about how they got there, how they're struggling to make ends meet. So rest assured, you may not be seeing it on the front page. It may not be as visible in your day-to-day life, but there are still many, many families in our state and our community who are struggling with food insecurity and the repercussions.
So what's the status of the child tax credit expansion? And I know there's another program that you've all been behind, Breakfast After the Bell, which, when I was reading up on it, it sounded like it was still in operation. Is it not? And what's going on with that?
All right. So I'll start with breakfast. School breakfast is a great program. It is underutilized in Illinois, and we've been working for a long time to help more children and families connect with that program. For one thing, it is a program that, it's there, it's at the school day, but it's not always as seamless as we would like it to be. The bus schedule might drop me off 10 minutes before school, and I have to get to class or get to my, you know, put my backpack, my books in my locker, and I just don't have time to go to the cafeteria for breakfast. What Breakfast After the Bell does is tries to make breakfast a little bit more part of the school day, remove some of those access barriers. It looks differently in different schools. A lot of schools, kids kind of a grab and go breakfast on the way to class. They walk through the door, there's a kiosk, a teacher, the school nutrition staff says good morning, they grab a, you know, a breakfast burrito or something on the way to class. There's no stigma with that. It's very convenient. In some schools, we're serving breakfast in the classroom, or breakfast is served still in the cafeteria, but it's after the school day has begun. So it's not this thing that I need to make sure that I get to school early for, or that, you know, oh gosh, the bus isn't getting me there in time. Breakfast after the bell is shown to really increase participation. We are pushing a piece of legislation this year in Springfield to help more schools start up the program. So it's often not a big financial commitment that's needed, a little bit of equipment, but that can be a barrier for schools, right? And so giving them some of that startup grant. We do a really great job in Illinois. There is a federal policy that allows us to provide meals for free in certain schools. CPS is one of those. I think about half of the schools in Illinois are eligible for that. And of those who are eligible, about 97% are making, you know, availing themselves of that option, which is great. So there are a lot of schools that are able to simplify and provide all meals free, but there are low-income children who are in schools that aren't providing meals free. And in fact, we think that there's about, there's children who are in these pockets of schools who are low income. They don't have meals for free. And so the other thing that we're doing through this legislation is eliminating the reduced price fee. So the lowest income children are getting meals for free. Families who are a little bit more in income, but certainly still facing a lot of hardship, they have a copay that they're paying for those meals. By reducing that, we're going to make sure that low-income children, regardless of where they are, what community they're in, we're eliminating that cost barrier. And then by giving schools incentives to start these more flexible breakfast models, we're hopefully eliminating any of kind of the access barriers. So we really think that those two things combined will help move the needle in terms of breakfast participation in Illinois.
Well, that's great. And the child tax credit,
Yep, that's another program we're advocating there. There's actually some policy opportunity both at the state level and the federal level. So child tax credit, eligible household can subtract a credit from the taxes, the federal taxes that they owe. There's been a lot of policy action in this space in the last few years. And so the amount that they receive has kind of gone up and down over the years. And in fact, one of the most significant actions that we took as a country during COVID was to expand the child tax credit. That was credited with a huge kind of decrease in child poverty. When we implemented it and when we took it away, child poverty went back up. So we have loads of evidence showing the impact of the child tax credit as just being a really powerful anti-poverty tool. So right now, Congress is considering another expansion of the child tax credit. Really critical that we do that. This proposal in particular would focus on the poorest of families. About 19 million children across the country only get a partial credit or even no credit because their family's income is too low. And so this legislation that Congress is considering would say, no, all of those families are going to be eligible for the full credit. We're also in Illinois, there's a coalition of organizations working to establish a child tax credit in Illinois. So that would be a $300 per child tax credit. Another really important opportunity for us to make sure that we're putting cash back in the pockets of families with children and giving them resources and flexibility to manage their budget and meet their needs for their household.
I'd like to thank Sophie Milam from the Greater Chicago Food Depository for spending the half hour with us. To our listeners, if you want a copy of this program or to hear it again, please visit our website at WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This summer, children around Illinois may receive a new benefit from the state to help their families buy food. It could help more than a million children, and advocates are trying to get the word out. So listen up. I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Anti-hunger advocates have wanted this for years, a school lunch program for the periods when the schools are not open, like in the summer. That wish has been granted this year by the state of Illinois. We spoke with a leading advocate about the program and a lot more. Sophie Milam is vice president of policy and advocacy for the Greater Chicago Food Depository. And she was excited to have good news to report.
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity. So millions of children receive meals each day at our schools, breakfast and lunch. In fact, children consume up to 50% of their total daily calories at school. So you can imagine when school ends for the summer, that can create a hardship or a strain on families when they lose access to those meals. So we're really excited that this summer, Illinois families and families across the country are going to have a new support available to them. It's called Summer EBT. And it is a grocery EBT card that they can use at authorized retailers to purchase the nutrition that works for their family and make sure that children have the nutrition that they need during the summer.
And EBT stands for Electronic Benefit Transfer, for people who aren't familiar with that. Well, first off, before we talk about what the program exactly will do, what were families doing about meals before this? Because let's face it, the school meal programs have been around for a while and summer's been around for a while.
That's right. So we do have other programs. We have something called the Summer Food Service Program, which is operated across the country. The Food Depository, in fact, supports hundreds of sites each summer. It is a great program where it works. It does not work in all communities. So essentially, it provides meals and snacks on site for children to eat during the summer. Oftentimes, there might be an enrichment activity as well, but not every community has a program. Even in communities that do have a program, it may not run all summer long. So maybe it helps in the month of July, but then it's not there the rest of the summer. And unlike in the school year where we have buses in rural areas, for example, to transport children to school, we don't have that with the Summer Food Service Program. So that transportation can be a barrier. All that to say, the result is that there's very low uptake. So as an example, in Illinois, there are almost 700,000 low-income children who are receiving free meals during the school year. Only about 10% are accessing the summer food program in the most recent summer. So the question you asked, what are families doing? Well, 10% of them might be able to access a meal program for part of the summer, but many of them are not. And unfortunately, we see child hunger rates often increase during the summer. And it's something that we've been advocating for well over a decade to try and get a better program to serve families.
Well, let's talk about the program that you did get. This program, first off, how much does it cost? And I mean, for the government, and how were you able to get it through the legislature?
I will have to come back to you on the total cost. I can tell you kind of what we're going to see here in Illinois. Mm-hmm. We've been advocating for this program since I think about 2008, 2009, advocates across the country. So it's taken quite a long time to make the case that we had to do something more to reach children during the summer. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, with support from Congress, has piloted and studied different ways to feed children during the summer. And after years of trying some different models and years of evidence, we were finally successful in getting kind of the nationwide expansion of those pilots. And so Illinois was one of the first states to raise their hands and say, yep, we want to implement this as soon as we can in summer 2024. We think that about 1.1 million children in Illinois are going to be eligible for over $130 million in benefits, which is huge. And I will tell you, actually, one of the most, I think, compelling pieces of evidence that really pushed this over the edge in terms of advocacy was the pandemic. So during the pandemic, when schools were closed, Congress authorized a temporary program called Pandemic EBT, PEBT, that provided families an EBT card for groceries. It was a little bit different. The amounts and the eligibility were a little bit different, but the same thing was that it was getting food in the hands of families with young children. And for comparison, the year before the pandemic, Illinois had about 100,000 children participating in summer meal programs with PEBT. We were serving over 1 million children. So we know that this is going to be really successful in connecting families with nutrition during the summer when school is out, and are grateful for advocacy and advocates across the country in moving this forward.
Yeah, how are families going to know whether they're eligible or not?
That's a really big challenge and something that we've been thinking about. I mean, this is a brand new program. In fact, the state, Illinois, is still actively setting up the program, getting systems in place. So there hasn't been much kind of a runway to get the word out to families. We've been partnering. The Greater Chicago Food Depository has the privilege of co-chairing the Illinois Commission on Hunger, which is a public-private partnership with state agencies like the Illinois Department of Human Services, the Illinois State Board of Education. And through the commission, we have been working to develop awareness materials and to reach out to community-based organizations, elected officials across the state, so that they can help get the word out to families that they are serving. But it is standing up a new program is hard. It's probably going to take a couple of years before we get it really, families sort of know about it and know how to apply, and it just becomes part of their cadence of how they connect with nutrition during the year. But we're doing everything we can to make sure that summer 2024 is successful and that we're connecting to as many families as possible.
Can I assume that families that were eligible for meal programs for their children in school every day are probably eligible for this? Is it close to that?
That is very close. So let's get specific. Families with school-age children who are under 185% of the poverty line, which is about $57,000 for a family of four, are going to be eligible for this. There's some more detail there. Number one, want families to know there's not a citizenship requirement like all of our federal nutrition programs. So this will be a really important source of nutrition for certain immigrant households. There are a couple different pathways for families to connect. Most importantly, if I could share one thing, it's that families should go to wegotyouillinois.org. It is a webpage that has every last detail. It is constantly being updated with the latest information. So that's really where you can go to get more information. But families have two main pathways. One is talking to your school. Make sure that you have a completed school meal application on file and that your address is up to date. This is especially important in Chicago and in other schools where all meals are provided for free to children. Because we provide meals for free without collecting individual applications in places where there's a high number of children in poverty, that's not going to qualify you. So if you're at a school like a CPS school where all meals are provided for free, you have to have an application on file, and you can reach out to your school now to ask to do that and to make sure that your address is up to date. The other pathway for families is through, if they're already participating in other public benefit programs like SNAP, TANF or cash assistance, income eligible Medicaid, or if they have a child in foster care, those families are automatically going to be enrolled in summer EBT. So there are a couple pathways in. It's a new program. It's kind of a lot to learn, but asking families to go to that wegotyouillinois.org website to learn more about how to get connected.
Well, I'm glad you repeated that because I was about to ask you to. But are there situations where parents who might have been eligible still have to let the school where they are know that, yeah, we want to participate during the summer? And let's face it, sometimes even contact information is not all, you know, all the same during the summer.
Yeah, I mean, part of the benefit of Congress and USDA studying this for so long is that we've learned some things. So in other states where they have automatically enrolled families who are participating in programs like SNAP, of course, we have much higher utilization of summer EBT, and that's great. So that's really important. Not only does it help families connect to summer EBT, but they're connecting to other benefits that can support them in terms of food and cash and healthcare. But there are families who are over the income limits for those programs, who their only way to kind of show their eligibility is through their school. Families move around during the school year, sometimes not just moving within a city, they might be moving to another city or even another state. And so making sure that your information is up to date, that you're enrolled in and have an application on file with your school for school meal programs is really important to getting connected to summer EBT.
And you were telling me about, you know, even up to this point, only 10% of people eligible are participating. Well, that raises two questions. One, you know, what is the thing that needs to be done to widen that net? And the other thing is, if you actually caught every student who was eligible, are these programs big enough?
Well, that's the great part about federal nutrition programs. Most of them are mandatory entitlement programs, meaning they will serve all families who are eligible. Our school breakfast and lunch program work that way, SNAP works that way, and summer EBT works that way. So that's incredibly important about our nutritional safety net. It is there to serve all families who are eligible. So we're really excited about that.
But clearly, if only 10% of those eligible have gotten it up to now, I would say we're doing something wrong.
Well, that's right. But remember, that was a different program. So that was the meals at a congregate site during the summer program. That program is not going away, by the way. It is considered a complement to summer EBT. So families don't have to choose between going to a summer meal site in their community if they have one and enrolling in summer EBT. They can do both. And we certainly encourage families to you know, get all the nutrition assistance that is available to them. But where summer EBT can come in with that 10% is for the families and the communities where the summer food meal program isn't working. It provides them a different option that they didn't have before, and hopefully one that's much more accessible to them.
It's also possible that, you know, people listening to this don't always think of, for example, you know, breakfast programs as being, you know, an absolute necessity, like kids won't have anything to eat all day if they don't get breakfast. But that's not necessarily the case. But also, I don't know if people know how common food insecurity is, or what, you know, we uninitiated just call hunger.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. For the families who know, they know all too well. We are seeing still today 1 in 4 households with children in the Chicago metropolitan area facing food insecurity. So that's a really significant number. Food insecurity exists in every county and every community. You just may not see it. And the consequences are really devastating. Number one, nationally and, you know, in Illinois and here in Chicago, Black and Latino families with children are disproportionately affected by hunger, which is really significant. We also know that food insecurity, hunger, has real impacts on children's development, their physical development, their cognitive development, but also their mental health. I could send you just a broad base of literature that illustrate the links between food insecurity and these poor health and developmental outcomes at every age. And so it is really critical that families are getting the nutrition that they need. One piece I'll mention is summer slide. So kids get a, you know, 3-month break from school. Many of them have a little bit of learning loss coming back to school in the fall. It's greater for food insecure children than it is for other children. There's all sorts of impacts that we see in terms of food insecurity, hunger's impact on children and families. And so, you know, making sure that families know that this is available to them and that it's a support that's there to help them. That's kind of the most important thing that we can do, is making that support known and accessible to families so that they don't have to face these really difficult choices in terms of how they're going to support their children.
Yeah, and we do hear a lot about the kind of developmental problems and mental problems. I mean, children who are worried about whether they're going to eat have trouble paying attention in school, and, you know, sometimes can feel shame for anyone else to know it. So I I know of those things. Let's talk about, well, especially from your perspective at the Greater Chicago Food Depository, how easy is it to get people to admit they need the help and to accept the help? I mean, is that not a big hurdle too?
It can be. And, you know, what we have learned is that hunger and connecting people to food assistance looks different from family to family, household to household. Older adults, the stigma that they feel, the barriers that they face are different from a family with young children or a family with school-age children. It is a blessing that we have meal programs in our schools at breakfast and lunch so that school-age children are able to get the nutrition they need in the places that they are going to be each day. And it is just part of their day. There's certainly some challenges still, especially with breakfast and connecting kids to those programs, but making it, you know, a seamless part of their day and reducing that stigma is really critical. As I mentioned, the SNAP program, giving families a private or a way of shopping that isn't kind of the way we used to do it in the old days in terms of food stamps, actual paper stamps, but they're shopping with a debit card like anyone else. They can shop at thousands of retailers that are, you know, authorized to accept those benefits. It makes it part of their way of just going about their day. It reduces that stigma, reduces barriers. But it really sort of depends on each family. What we have heard or what we have read about in the literature is that for families with children, food insecurity is first experienced by the parents. They are the ones who are reducing how much they eat, the quality of the food that they're eating, skipping meals so that they can protect their children from hunger. So by the time that we see children experiencing food insecurity, we know that those families have run out of choices to kind of protect their kids. And that's where having the nutrition assistance is so important.
You're listening to News Radio 780's At Issue. I'm political editor Craig Delamore. We're talking about fighting hunger among children in Illinois. My guest is Sophie Milam, a vice president with the Greater Chicago Food Depository. How much of a factor are things like what we've come to call food deserts? But I think of the problem even more broadly because, someone close to me grew up talking about the kinds of meals they ate. And the issue wasn't that they thought they were necessarily hungry, but they weren't eating anything healthy. So how much does that all factor in as well? The ability to get the meal, no matter how much money you have, that you have to be able to get the food that's nutritious.
Yeah, that's also something that's really important. And we think about that a lot in Chicago and which neighborhoods have access to adequate retail and which don't. The thing about food deserts that we don't always lift up is that while they often are impacting communities that have households who are living in poverty, there are also people in those communities who have the resources they need to purchase food, but to your point, they don't have the choices. They don't have full service grocery stores with the most variety and the best price point of food. And so their choices are restricted. For low-income families, food insecure families, those are folks whose choices are already restricted by their budget. And then you couple that by the restrictions in terms of what's available to them. Time scarcity, transportation barriers, all of these things sort of compile and aggregate. And so oftentimes families are, just as you said, having nutrition that maybe prevents me from being hungry, but it's not the nutrition that I need to thrive.
I do want to talk to you about a couple of other quick things, because the programs that we've already talked about are there, but there's more. So let's talk a little bit. Well, and even before we talk about that, how prevalent is hunger in this area? How prevalent is it? I mean, you know, we discuss it, but is this affecting a lot more people than we think?
Yes. So child hunger, or I should say hunger in general, is not always visible. About one in four households with children in our community are struggling with food insecurity. It's something that is, like I said, it's in every community, it's in every county, but you just may not see it. In terms of trends that we've seen in recent years, you know, hunger went up during the Great Recession, was starting to fall. We were really concerned during the pandemic about the shocks that that had and how that would impact families. And certainly there were a lot more families who were struggling. But we did something really important as a country at that time, which is we expanded the safety net, and we did it really quickly. And so we expanded existing programs. I mentioned we stood up a program called PBT. We expanded the child tax credit. And the data that we have shows that those really protected families from, you know, sharp increases in poverty and food insecurity. Unfortunately, those programs expired, and they expired at the same time that families were also dealing with soaring inflation, especially around food prices, gas prices, declining wages. And so the phase out of those expanded benefits hit this really a triple blow to families who were, some of them, still reeling from financial instability brought about by the pandemic. And so, you know, having lived through COVID and working at a food bank and working in this space during that period, it was so visible. We saw it on the front page, food banks on the front page of the newspaper. That doesn't happen every day. But we saw,
thank
you know,
goodness.
Lines, cars, you know, lined up for miles in some places. Everybody knew somebody, even if it wasn't a close friend. The restaurant that you go to, the dry cleaner that you go to was closed, and you just, everyone was so aware, oh, that person who I see, they don't have a job right now. That place is closed. And so we really, as a society, economic hardship, food insecurity became so visible. And now the pandemic has receded. We've kind of gotten mostly back to normal. And food insecurity is one of those things that you just don't always see. The folks who see it, though, you know, teachers in schools who we talk to, they know the children who are showing up on Monday morning so eager for that school breakfast because they haven't had enough to eat over the weekend. There are folks who, you know, we see them showing up at our food pantries and hearing their stories about how they got there, how they're struggling to make ends meet. So rest assured, you may not be seeing it on the front page. It may not be as visible in your day-to-day life, but there are still many, many families in our state and our community who are struggling with food insecurity and the repercussions.
So what's the status of the child tax credit expansion? And I know there's another program that you've all been behind, Breakfast After the Bell, which, when I was reading up on it, it sounded like it was still in operation. Is it not? And what's going on with that?
All right. So I'll start with breakfast. School breakfast is a great program. It is underutilized in Illinois, and we've been working for a long time to help more children and families connect with that program. For one thing, it is a program that, you know, it's there, it's at the school day, but it's not always as seamless as we would like it to be. The bus schedule might drop me off 10 minutes before school, and I have to get to class or get to my, you know, put my backpack, my books in my locker, and I just don't have time to go to the cafeteria for breakfast. What Breakfast After the Bell does is tries to make breakfast a little bit more part of the school day, remove some of those access barriers. It looks differently in different schools. A lot of schools, kids kind of a grab and go breakfast on the way to class. They walk through the door, there's a kiosk, a teacher, the school nutrition staff says good morning. They grab a, you know, a breakfast burrito or something on the way to class. There's no stigma with that. It's very convenient. In some schools, we're serving breakfast in the classroom, or breakfast is served still in the cafeteria, but it's after the school day has begun. So it's not this thing that I need to make sure that I get to school early for, or that, you know, oh gosh, the bus isn't getting me there in time. Breakfast After the Bell is shown to really increase participation. We are pushing a piece of legislation this year in Springfield to help more schools start up the program. So it's often not a big financial commitment that's needed, a little bit of equipment, but that can be a barrier for schools, right? And so giving them some of that startup grant. We do a really great job in Illinois. There is a federal policy that allows us to provide meals for free in certain schools. CPS is one of those. I think of the about half of the schools in Illinois are eligible for that. And of those who are eligible, about 97% are making, you know, availing themselves of that option, which is great. So there are a lot of schools that are able to simplify and provide all meals free. But there are low-income children who are in schools that aren't providing meals free. And in fact, we think that there's about there's children who are in these pockets of schools who are low income. They don't have meals for free. And so the other thing that we're doing through this legislation is eliminating the reduced price fee. So the lowest income children are getting meals for free. Families who are a little bit more in income, but certainly still facing a lot of hardship, they have a copay that they're paying for those meals. By reducing that, we're going to make sure that low-income children, regardless of where they are, what community they're in, we're eliminating that cost barrier. And then by giving schools incentives to start these more flexible breakfast models, we're hopefully eliminating any of kind of the access barriers. So we really think that those two things combined will help move the needle in terms of breakfast participation in Illinois.
Well, that's great. And the child tax credit,
That's another important one. We're advocating there. There's actually some policy opportunity both at the state level and the federal level. So child tax credit, eligible household can subtract a credit from the taxes, the federal taxes that they owe. There's been a lot of policy action in this space in the last few years. And so the amount that they receive has kind of gone up and down over the years. And in fact, one of the most significant actions that we took as a country during COVID was to expand the child tax credit. That was credited with a huge kind of decrease in child poverty when we implemented it. And when we took it away, child poverty went back up. So we have loads of evidence showing the impact of the child tax credit as just being a really powerful anti-poverty tool. So right now, Congress is considering another expansion of the child tax credit. Really critical that we do that. This proposal in particular would focus on the poorest of families. About 19 million children across the country only get a partial credit or even no credit because their family's income is too low. And so this legislation that Congress is considering would say, no, all of those families are going to be eligible for the full credit. We're also in Illinois, there's a coalition of organizations working to establish a child tax credit in Illinois. So that would be a $300 per child tax credit. Another really important opportunity for us to make sure that we're putting cash back in the pockets of families with children and giving them resources and flexibility to manage their budget and meet their needs for their household.
I'd like to thank Sophie Milam from the Greater Chicago Food Depository for spending the half hour with us. To our listeners, if you want a copy of this program or to hear it again, please visit our website at WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.